This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
PGA Championship downriver at Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis. Gary Woodland, your leader after 18 holes at 6 under par. Ricky Fowler looking for that first major at 5 under par. Brandon Stone, Zach Johnson at 4 under par. Some of the other big names, including Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, are at even par. Spring Lake Park's Troy Merritt at 1 over par. I thought Phil finished at 3 over par. Let's just see if we can get there. Yeah, Phil, 3 over 73 today. All right, let's talk Loons. Minnesota United FC and sporting director Manny Lagos joins us on the line. Manny, how are you on this warm summer evening?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, nice warm day.
Yeah, for sure. And I want this to linger as long as possible. I'm never going to complain about the heat. Never.
Yeah. The guys actually flew out today for LA. In 2 hour time differences, they usually tend to travel a day, 2 days before the game. So they got out there today. They trained there today. They'll train tomorrow in a big one against the Galaxy on Saturday night.
Yeah, and an opportunity to turn around things on the road for sure. If you had to review 2018 so far, it is road woes for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think sports kind of comes at moments where it kind of, you know, comes to your weaknesses and says, hey, here it is and see what you can do. And yeah, certainly we've been outstanding at home, but we've struggled on the road. There's no doubt about it. And we have a 5-game road trip over the next month and a half, and I think that'll really determine our playoff push here. So I'm excited for it. You know, I know we've struggled on the road, but we've grown a lot. We've gotten better. And I think the guys are excited for the next month and a half to really push and play well on the road.
All right. A few days ago, you made a big announcement. Christian Ramirez, to borrow a sports term from another sport, baseball, was sold to the Los Angeles Football Club. Take us through that deal, Manny. I know fans, supporters have had strong feelings about it. A lot has been written. But take us through that whole deal and how it can help the Loons going forward.
Yeah, I would start with, you know, I think, you know, just to send Christian off in a positive way, what a great young man. What a young man has kind of built up his career here and has been a part of this organization through thick and thin, through the transition from our NESL days to MLS last year and inaugural season. Certainly, I have a great sense of pride because I obviously recruited him here and coached him for many years. And, you know, anytime you have a player that you bring in and you develop and then he goes on to really grow into a really outstanding player, it's a tough decision to do. At the same time, you know, we felt as we were growing, as we were getting better, Christian really wanted to go home. It just kind of lined up for us. You know, our roster is really getting pretty solid offensively. There's other positions on the field that were really important, especially going into this offseason where we have to have cap room. And LAFC came in with a very good deal. Essentially, it's tough in the world of MLS. We have this what's called GAM and TAM. It's general allocation money and TAM money, but essentially it was about, for about $1 million. Plus, we get another $600,000 off his salary. And it really became, you know, a multi-million dollar deal that we couldn't pass up. And certainly it's tough, but we think it's going to make us better in the long run. And anytime you make those tough decisions for the club, I think you're making the right decision. But as a fan, which I am as well, it's never easy. It was a tough week, I guess, for our fan base. I think in the end, though, we're all excited about how we can grow from it.
Yeah, and Manny, you've been around this thing for a long time and the growth of soccer to the point where the Loons are now in Major League Soccer, and his growth as a player and for him to be able to make the transition from the North American Soccer League to Major League Soccer and have that success, it really is a good story. And the fact that he gets to return to his home in L.A., as you mentioned, you have to feel good for the young man, even if supporters aren't all that thrilled at the moment. It's a good story for him.
It is, and I actually think it's a good story for us because this soccer business is a global game, and to create a cultural environment, you're going to bring players in, you're going to develop them, and you're going to move them on maybe at the height of their value, which is tough sometimes, but you get a lot of resources off of that to kind of help and build and grow your team. It's going to resonate. You know, we're going to be able to recruit players that know we're a team that can develop and grow players and grow them into high-level professional soccer players. So it certainly is not something we did without the knowledge of we're still first and foremost competing for a playoff spot. You know, we think this move makes us better, even right now. So, again, for us, this was an important decision. It was a tough decision. We wish Christian all the best because, again, he's been a great servant to the club and he's developed such a great rapport with the community. But we also know, again, we have to think about the club and the health of the club, both short and long term. And this certainly puts us in a great position to make some moves still towards the end of this year. And certainly as we go into Allianz Field next year in terms of where we want to be in terms of roster health, cap health, this puts us in a very, very good position.
And as a member of the sports media for a long time, understanding these intricacies of this game and transfer windows and how the money works and trying to find players and making deals and loaning players, that there's a lot to learn.
There's a lot. I'm excited for our Minnesota sports fans to kind of realize that we have entered this massive global transfer market of players, of buying and selling, very similar to stock market, of development, of just tons of different ways to take assets you have and generate revenue or generate players. So we're right at the beginning, even as MLS entering that. You know, this last transfer window probably globally will be over $1 billion in player sales back and forth. And again, the MLS is just starting to really get good at starting to develop players. We have a long way to go, but we'll get there. And again, we're starting to acquire a lot of players into our league, a lot of young superstars that's going to help it grow. And we have a lot of great academies, including ours, which we believe is going to produce high-level pro players, be part of that global kind of soccer stock market.
And a good example is that the kid in Vancouver.
Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, he's great. He just got sold for about $15 million, but it could be up to $22 million to Bayern Munich. That is just going to open up the window for us to recruit even better young players or get excited about developing that young kid from our market to maybe go over to Europe. But that is a great, great story.
All right. As we move forward, it's a long ways between now and the next home match. It's kind of a quirk in the schedule, but the Loons better get used to the road for a time.
We should, and I always you know, like taking a moment to kind of say that the schedule won't be this chunky next year. This certainly is part of us, you know, playing at the home of our great Gopher football team. And this is the meat of their season coming up. And you know, that's part of sharing that stadium. Next year, we get to have what I will be the very best soccer state in the country. We'll be able to control our schedule better. So I don't think we'll put our fans through a month and a half of being away. But like I said, you know, part of this season, our biggest challenge has been to be mentally tough on the road. And that's not just wins. That's ties as well. We've got to figure out a way to get points. You get 1 point for a tie, 3 for a win. We have to kind of climb up that playoff line by making sure that we can walk off the field with either 1 or 3 points in these next 5 games.
All right, Allianz Field, will that be a tool? Will that help you in your job as sporting director?
It sure will. It's going to be iconic on so many levels. First and foremost, it's surreal to be talking to Minnesota fans about the sport of soccer and the growth it's had in the country. But in this market, what's going on at the fans at the game, the just the energy that's going through Minnesota about soccer right now, and then to take a deep breath and to imagine that, you know, only 5 years ago we weren't sure whether soccer was going to be here or not, and now we're going to be opening, to me, the most iconic stadium in this country. And it's going to be beautiful. It really is. And one of the reasons why I'm so excited as well is we've got this partner in Allianz, and they are such a global company. They only partner with the most iconic stadiums in the world. So right away when we enter into Allianz Field, we're not only entering into the family of MLS, we're into this global family of powerhouse soccer clubs, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Nice, Rapid Vienna, and Austria. It's just through the roof what we can do from those partnerships. And again, the global brand that we're building is really, really exciting.
Yeah, I got over to the Midway area not all that long ago, and it is cool. I don't know what other word to describe it. It really is a gem, and it's totally transformed that area.
I love the word. It's going to be transformational. You know, as somebody who grew up in St. Paul, the St. Paul kid, a little over a mile from where the stadium is, I simply love that neighborhood. And that neighborhood, I always tell people, you know, I used to take that bus stop at Snelling and University. And as awesome as the neighborhood is, you know, you had to have your wits about you. And I think for so long, that neighborhood's been looking for just a beacon to help it grow and build. And, you know, we have so many fans already buying houses in the Hamlin neighborhood. We have businesses, people buying bars to get ready for that come in there. And by the way, it's not just the stadium. That entire block is going to be redeveloped into a super block of just apartments, hotels, offices. It really is. I love that you use the word transformational because that's what it's going to be.
All right, Manny, always great. I know one of those weeks that with a big move and a fan favorite like Christian Ramirez, that's not an easy transition and not an easy transaction to make. And I'm sure the club will move forward from that.
We will. And I want to tell our fans, you know, we really appreciate the support. We also understand and respect the criticism. It's important that, you know, that we hopefully start to develop a rapport. There's an emotional reaction to our players. We really are trying to get a connection with the community. And Christian was one of those special players that had that. So I think it's normal, and it's something that, you know, we hope to build other players like Chris in the future when I have the impact on the field, but also have the impact he had in this community.
All right. Have a good one, Manny. Oh, it was great. Thanks. All right. There he is, Manny Lago, sporting director of the Loons, Minnesota United FC, here on CCO Radio. And they're going to be back at it, LA Galaxy, late on Saturday night. You'll have to stay up late to see that one on Fox Sports North. They're going to have a twin bill, Twins and Tigers early, and the LA Galaxy late on FSN. Of course, we have every Twins game here on CCO, including tomorrow night, game one of the three games set with the Tigers. We'll be on the air at 5:30 with first pitch at 6:10. Twins fall 5-4 in the finale of that four-game set. At Progressive Field, the Twins fall 11 games back. But I was going to throw this number out early. And I didn't hammer real quick. If they were playing in the East, how many games would the Twins be behind the Red Sox? If they were playing in the East, just a quick guess.
I'm going to guess 20.
27.5.
27.5.
The Yanks are in second, 9 back. Tampa Bay playing 500 ball. Tampa Bay is 500, and they're 23.5 games out of first place. Think about that.
I just shudder to hear how far back the Orioles are.
The Orioles are 35-79 at this moment.
Okay.
Their percentage, their winning percentage, 307. They're 45.5 games out.
So the Orioles have 35 wins. And how many wins does the Red Sox have right now?
81.
So basically the Orioles have to pretty much run the table.
They're not mathematically
it's still a shot.
Well, the Royals are in the same boat. 35-79. They're a whopping 29 games behind Cleveland.
And just think, 4 years ago, those two teams battled for the American League title.
It is amazing. Now, Houston, leading the West by 5 over Oakland, surprising Oakland. They're 73-42. If the Twins were playing out West, they would be 19.5 games out. 73-42, a .635 winning percentage.
That's pretty good.
That is solid. Houston would be leading the Yankees by a full game right now. The Yanks are 71-42. Houston has two more wins, so they're two up in the win.
Steve, how fun will the American League playoffs be this October?
Oh, I just think it's going to be tremendous. And don't count out Cleveland. This Cleveland team has pitching. They have a pretty good lineup.
They've addressed their bullpen.
They have Brad Hand's out there.
Miller's healthy again.
Yeah.
Allen's still pretty solid despite what happened on Wednesday night.
So even though Cleveland right now, 64-50, 14 games over, they are a dangerous team with that potential starting pitcher.
All I know is if I'm Houston, I wouldn't want to play Cleveland in a short series.
Absolutely not. And we've seen over the years, remember Seattle had that big win total a number of years ago?
They did.
They won 114 ball games. 116. Okay, you'd know. Seattle guy. They didn't go anywhere. They didn't win the World Series.
No, they lost.
There's no guarantee.
They lost in 5 to the Yankees that year.
But you have Boston, New York, Cleveland, Houston, Oakland or Seattle are still in the mix for that second wild card, the AL could be really, really good this fall.
It's going to be fun to watch.
A lot of fun. All right, we got a break. 8:25 here at CCO. We'll have a PGA Championship leaderboard update in a moment. A little bit later on in the hour, little NASCAR. Of course, Jordan Bianchi will join us. He covers the sport for SB Nation. He was in the air on Wednesday. We'll talk Michigan. We'll talk the good news, Chase Elliott. We'll talk the bad news, Brian France, and his problems, all coming up a little bit later on here on Sports to the Max. Sports to the Max! Steve Thompson in for Mike Max tonight. Twins got beat 5-4 in a matinee, and Cleveland dropped 3-4. On to Detroit for 3 with the Tigers. Beginning tomorrow night, our pregame 5:30, first pitch 6:10, and then return home to with the Pirates at Target Field starting on Tuesday night here on the home of the Twins. Vikes are going to be in Denver. Case Keenum, the new Bronco quarterback. I don't know how much the starters Kirk Cousins or Case Keenum are going to play. Probably not a lot. And that will be a late start. 8 o'clock Saturday night in Denver for that one. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Lynx tonight, they're playing out west at Las Vegas. And it's really been a roller coaster ride. They've looked good. But I'll tell you what, in what I've seen of the Lynx this year, Maya Moore has a big night, they got a chance. Maya Moore doesn't have a big night, they have no chance. It just comes down to that as the team ages. Maya Moore lights it up, they'll get it done. She doesn't, they won't. I think it's as simple as that. 82 degrees, north winds at 10 miles an hour. PGA Championship leaderboard. One round in the books at Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis. It was hot. It was humid. It's always hot and humid in St. Louis in the summer. Gary Woodland at 6-under. Ricky Fowler one back. Brandon Stone, Zach Johnson, 2 off the lead. Austin Cook, Ian Poulter, Pat Perez, Jason Day, Brian Gay, Stuart Sink, Ollie Schneider-Jans, Dustin Johnson, Kevin Kisner, Justin Rose, Thomas Peters, all at 3-under par. That's what they call a log jam on the leaderboard. So there's a lot of good players in reach. Tiger and Rory, even. Phil, 3-over. And Troy Merritt from Spring Lake Park, he is at 1-over par. So he's in the mix, trying to make the cut in a major. Of course, he got that win at the Barbasol Championship, opposite of the Open Championship this year, to secure his card. Good for him, his second win on tour. 8:33 here at CCO. We'll talk NASCAR. Jordan Bianchi, SB Nation. Big win for Chase Elliott at Watkins Glen. And then bad news, the leader of the sport, Brian France, in trouble with the law. We'll get into all of that with Jordan in a moment here on CCO.
Radio.com.
8:38, 22 minutes now in front of 9 here at CCO. Twins fall to the Tribe 5-4 for the Vikings. Nick Easton on IR, very likely out for the season. He has a bulging disc in his neck. Not good news. Vikes head for Denver. Open the preseason with the Broncos on Saturday night. Twins in Detroit, I would assume by now, getting set for a 3-game series tomorrow night. Our coverage begins at 5:30 tomorrow afternoon. First pitch just after 6. Corey Provis and Chris Atterbury on the call. Dan Gladden taking a little time away. Let's talk NASCAR. It's been a while since I visited with Jordan Bianchi. He covers the sport for SBNation.com. Jordan, always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Yeah, good to visit with you. And let's start with the good news. Let's start with the fact that Chase Elliott broke through. Thrilling finish at Watkins Glen. And I know it keeps getting said over and over and over again, but is he the guy that can be the next face of the sport?
Yes. I mean, okay. I think if you listen to the race on Sunday and you were there and you're watching it on TV, when he took the lead in the closing laps and when he was holding off Martin Truex Jr. and when he crossed the finish line to win his first career race, Absolutely, yes. You can hear the crowd. They get behind him. He's got that same, you know, when he's up front in contention, people are behind him. He's got that name. He's got the connection to his father, Bill Elliott, who was so popular. He obviously has, you know, he's driving for the legendary Hendrick Motorsports team. So, yeah, I mean, I think Chase is that guy that a lot of people are putting their hopes on that he can be the next guy. And I think he can do it to some level. I don't think he's going to be as big as Earnhardt is, per se, because I don't know if anybody currently can do that. That's a really tall task. But Chase Elliott is going to be the next future face of this sport, and I think he proved on Sunday that he's up for the task.
You know, it's really interesting. You know, Junior hung it up not that long ago. Jeff Gordon, two guys that clearly were the face of the sport, and they missed that. There's a lot of good drivers. You know, Kyle Busch is a tremendous talent, but he's not the kind of guy that a lot of people are going to warm up to. Jimmy Johnson, you know, 7-time champion. This guy can wheel a car, but he never has really captured the imagination the way, here in this modern era, Jeff Gordon or Junior have.
No, absolutely. I mean, I will contend that there is more talent, you know, in the starting lineup of a weekly NASCAR race than there ever has been before, and especially young talent. But it comes down to having that connection with fans, having the charisma to connect beyond just what you can do on the racetrack. Jeff Gordon was able to do that. You know, we saw him host daytime talk shows, Saturday Night Live. Dale Earnhardt Jr. obviously was, you know, he branched out and did all sorts of things outside of the realm of NASCAR. And it takes that kind of connection almost to become, you know, become a face that you know instantly and you recognize. And there are a lot of great drivers right now. There's a lot of very talented drivers, but I don't really think you can point at one and say, you know what, that is someone you instantly recognize. That is someone you could see maybe hosting a Saturday Night Live one day. And I'm not saying Chase Elliott's going to have that. It doesn't have that personality, but he does have that connection with the fans that gets them to support him, to rally behind him. And that's a really big thing. And you need some other guys to come along and have that same kind of connection. But I think that Chase Elliott is going to be that guy.
Yeah. And here's another thing. The sport has Southern roots, clearly. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, Jeff Gordon, you know, spent time in California and Indiana. And, you know, you've certainly got Junior, you know, the son of the great Dale Earnhardt, the late great Dale Earnhardt. But, you know, here's Chase Elliott from Dawsonville, Georgia, the son of Awesome Bill from Dawsonville. That's got a ring to it as well, and may help the sport in an area where maybe some fans have left because it became too corporate and there were too many guys from California. Is that sound about right?
No, it does. I think NASCAR will, you know, you talk to people within the industry and they will say that, you know what, that NASCAR's lost some of its roots. It's lost being able to touch, you know, go back and have that connection. And I think that was one of the charms of Earnhardt, was that not only was he the son of a 7-time champion, but he was from North Carolina. He was someone who loved and appreciated the history of the sport and really cherished it. And in a lot of ways, Chase Elliott's the same way. He grew up there. He was going to the racetrack as a young kid to watch his dad race. You know, he is from a hotbed where NASCAR is king. I mean, Chase Elliott gets off the plane Sunday night after winning in Watkins Glen, and he's got hundreds of people at the Dawsonville airport cheering him on and congratulating him. That shows you that kind of, you know, that resonates, that win and what he does. I think absolutely. I think you have to have that. I think NASCAR's made steps to try to go back to its roots a little bit after a period of where maybe it kind of turned its back on that support. And I think part of it is having drivers that connect who grew up in this and who are so used to it. And Chase Elliott certainly qualifies as that.
All right. Get him a win in the Southern 500 coming up at Darlington, and I think they'd blow the roof off the place.
I think it would be very reminiscent of when Bill Elliott won at Darlington in 1985 to win $1 million, and they would shake the place, and it would make their presence felt. And I think Chase has got a really good opportunity before him, and I've always said that he's come close. He finished second 8 times, and it always felt like if he could get that first win, the second win was going to come a lot sooner and a lot easier. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him roll off a couple wins, you know, 2 or 3 wins before the season ends here. That team, Hendrick, has had their struggles this year, but they have gotten significantly better as the year goes along. They're still not where to the level they're used to being at, but as Chase showed Sunday, they're very much capable of winning, and there's some very good tracks coming up for Elliott to win at. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some more wins before the season's out.
All right, the carnival stops at Michigan this Sunday, a second stop this summer at Michigan. We've talked over and over about the schedule and tweaks they need to make. But then it's on to Bristol, and then a break before the Southern 500. And I think they did a great job moving it back to Labor Day weekend and making it a big deal. I think that was a really, really good scheduling move. They need to make more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of goes back to your point earlier about how NASCAR is getting in touch with its roots and trying to reconnect with some fans who maybe felt disenfranchised or disconnected a little bit. And moving the Southern 500 back to Liberty Weekend, which, let's be honest, is a race that should have never moved off that weekend. That was a staple on the calendar. And be honest with you, it was something that non-NASCAR fans or casual NASCAR fans recognized, saying, hey, well, they're at Darlington because it's Labor Day weekend. And, and to put it back there gives that race even more meaning and add a specialness to it, add in the fact that they've really turned the weekend into kind of a way to pay tribute to the sports history with throwback paint schemes and bringing all the Hall of Fame drivers to celebrate them. It is a special, special weekend. And I think it's become one of those can't-miss events on the NASCAR calendar.
All right, tough one to talk about. In the wake of Chase Elliott's victory, NASCAR Chairman and CEO Brian France was picked up by law enforcement, and this is not a good story. In the wake of all the good news and positive pub, Chase Elliott getting that W at Watkins Glen, this goes 180 in the other direction.
It is. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, it was a really, if you talk to people that are with NASCAR and within the industry, Chase Elliott winning Sunday was kind of a dream scenario. All season long, veteran drivers have dominated. Chase Elliott is the face of this new emerging young driver class. But those young drivers really haven't had a lot of success this season. Chase Elliott finally breaks through, gets that first win, is kind of ready to take that next big step in his career. This week was going to be a celebration, almost a coronation, if you will, and to celebrate that as this young driver wins a big race and is ready to step up. And who knows from here, maybe win some more races, maybe become a title contender. And then the unfortunate news, like you said, Steve, is Monday morning, it comes out that Brian France was arrested on Sunday night and everything associated with that. And that has been the dominant headlines this week. It's not so much what Chase winning, it's now what, you know, NASCAR CEO was arrested for, you know, DUI and having some legal pills. Yeah, it takes a shine off a little bit. It's unfortunate, and it's going to carry over. We've already seen it today. A lot of the drivers were at a lot of Ford drivers were at an event just outside of Detroit, and they were asked about what was going on. And that's going to be the dominant conversation this weekend is what happened, what are your thoughts, and going forward, what's NASCAR going to be like? And those are the questions that are going to kind of hang over everything for this weekend and probably for the next few weekends as this plays out.
Yeah, and the France family is run the sport and owned the sport since the beginning, and there's been talk that maybe they'd bring in partners. And I think this would intensify the fact that maybe the sport needs to move beyond the France family. Hard to believe, but I can't imagine there wouldn't be more talk about that.
It does open up the question of who's going to lead this sport going forward. I mean, Brian France is really conscientiously taking a more behind-the-scenes role the last few years. He's not as involved on a day-to-day basis of running it. He's not at the track on an every-week basis. He kind of focuses on big-picture things, and that void has been noticeable. There's been several drivers who have questioned his commitment, saying, you know, this is somebody who needs to be here, needs to be basically in the trenches with us, knowing what's going on, talking to us on an every-week basis. And this is just going to fuel the rumors of what's going to happen next. You know, his uncle, Jim France, is taking over the CEO role. Jim is the son of Bill France Jr., who ran the sport for decades. So there is no lack of experience and guidance there. But Jim is, you know, in his 70s. And so if you're looking long-term vision, you have to think who is going to be in that position to lead this 5, 10, 15 years down the road. Those questions, we don't have answers to right now.
All right. Well, Jordan, it's always great. Thanks so much for the time.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
All right. There he is, Jordan Bianchi, once again joining us. Covers the sport for SBNation.com. He'll be at Michigan, then a break, then on to the Southern 500. So good news with Chase Elliott. Not so good with Chairman and CEO Brian France in legal trouble. He was arrested on charges of driving while intoxicated and criminal possession of oxycodone. And he is taking an indefinite leave from the sport. 10 minutes now in front of 9. here at CCO. 82 degrees, north winds at 10. We'll put a wrap, get a preview of the Al Malmberg Show coming up. We'll have all the news and weather at 9 here at CCO. Sports to the max here on a Thursday night. Twins fall to the Tribe in the final game of the four-game series. 5-4 today. Another walk-off. They got beaten a walk-off. Lindor hit a three-run home run on Wednesday night. And then today, the Twins go down. I'm not even going to play the highlight at this point in time. They lose 5-4, drop 3 out of 4. Yeah, exactly. I played it a couple of times earlier, Al, but another tough one for the Twins. That one on Wednesday night was,
boy, that was
gut-wrenching.
Killer. And today was gut-wrenching as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a line drive laced, and that's it. Game over.
Football is back. Vikings-Broncos from Denver Saturday night. I know it's preseason.
You know, it's going to be fun seeing the flip-flop of the quarterbacks. And you know, it's a lot of people talking about it out here. And it's I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward to football this year. Not only the NFL, but the University of Minnesota, St. Thomas, and I follow CSU out here. And so I'm ready for football.
Yeah, it's coming up quick. Of course, Case Keenum, the new man. Yeah. I like Case Keenum as a Viking quarterback. Yep. And we had a long chat at my other job about Keenum. We should have been working, but we were talking football. Don't tell anybody.
I won't.
Yeah. It'll be our little secret. But I like Keenum. He had a pocket presence. And I know you know what I mean by that, and the Hammer would agree as well. Yep. He had that sixth sense to know when to step up or step aside and avoid the rush. Yep. And I'm not calling him Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, but he looked good. I think he's going to do very well in Denver.
You know, I'll tell you what, he has been he's well-liked. He has become the team leader, and they're expecting really, really good things out of him. And it'll be fun to see him. You know, I don't know how many downs, how many snaps he'll take. I don't know how many snaps Kirk Cousins will take. I don't think very many.
No.
You know, the big concern for the Vikings, obviously, is the offensive line. And that is concerning, especially when you've got the new gunner in town in Kirk Cousins. You know, you want to be able to protect that guy.
Yeah, Nick Easton on IR with the neck problem, so that's certainly not good. All right, Al, time's a little bit tight. What do you got coming up on the program?
We're going to have former Governor Tim Pawlenty on in the first hour of the show, and it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, big primary coming up, and I'm sure a very expensive general election race is amazing.
No question about it. You know, the primaries have been interesting and will continue to be so. But the general election is going to be, you know, some say perhaps the most important we've had in decades in this country. And they may very well be right.
Yeah, so. People are energized on both sides for sure. And really, that's, I think, what anybody wants, to get out and vote.
I don't think there's anything worse than when you have less than 50% of voters turn out for elections.
It should be 100%.
It should be.
It should be.
I don't understand that. Yeah. I don't get it.
It's always been an honor for me ever since I was old enough, at 18 years old, to cast a ballot. That's for sure.
It's a matter of personal pride. You feel good about it, don't you?
That's right. All right, Al, we've got to run. We have the news, we have the weather, and then Al Malmberg on a Thursday.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.